71.
Still here?
Still here.
Are we going to go back to saying that?
We might go back to saying that.
I don't know. I know it seems like we spend so much time bouncing up and down between still here and elsewhere, still here and elsewhere. Still at least here. I am.
What's the opposite of still here? Not here?
Elsewhere.
Or maybe. Elsewhere?
Elsewhere. I don't know. But sometimes it feels like I'm elsewhere, but then sometimes the harsh truth drags you down and you're like, ugh, I'm back there again.
Yeah, I can relate.
Yeah. So this podcast is once again back on that topic. I'm still here. Which is
so the topic today is adopting your inner child, your wounded inner child.
Mm-hmm.
That when you were young, stuff happened. Maybe you remember it, maybe you don't. Very good chance you even don't. And that has caused you could look at it as that has caused the neural pathways in your brain to have developed these channels that remind you of whenever something happens in your adult life, remind you of something unpleasant in childhood. And you end up thinking that, oh, it's, you know, it's like the election, for example. I was just editing that podcast. That's, you know, oh, I'm so worked up about the election. Oh, this, that. But it's not that. It's that makes you feel, for example, unsafe. And that unsafety is triggering your, you know, three-year-old version of you that felt unsafe when, I don't know what, you were, you know, crying in your room and mom and dad didn't come get you. Who knows? It doesn't even matter what it is, but there was something in everybody's childhood, many, many things that made them feel unsafe, unloved, you know, at risk, whatever. And those things linger with us in our subconscious into adulthood throughout our entire lives. And every time we end up getting triggered as an adult, it's really poking that. And while at the surface, it seems like, oh, the election, it's the election that's really getting me going. Oh, it's, you know, bill of the office is really, oh, ah. It's not really those things. It's triggering the deep-rooted childhood things. And addressing it at that surface level, it's the election, it's bill of the office, will never fix it because there will always be another thing just to take its place.
Yeah, but, you know, a really good gauge to that is the response to any one situation is unproportionate to the actual extent of the situation.
Yes, yes.
That is a very good indication. That is like, to me, that is the simplest thing that I can go, well, it's obviously much, if to me, it feels much bigger than whatever. And so that is very easy to start to pick up the truth and underlying truth that you're being triggered into a childhood trauma is because your reaction as an adult is unproportionate to any incident that is actually occurring, right? It seems out of proportion. But because it's coming out of this depth of unprocessed depth of a child, you know, childhood not knowing how to process trauma.
Yeah, that and the internal charge is the way I word it, that charge that you feel about something, right? It's, there's this like, I get it like right here. There's this in my, for the listeners, in my like solar plexus region. When something pokes me, it's like, oh, I can feel this energy right here. And it's not great. In as much as like, you know, I guess the election didn't really do it for me, so I didn't feel a charge there. But you could tell when we talked to all those people, they really felt something to the point where they were literally shaking and crying and blaming God for it. But there are plenty of other things that other people would think are ridiculous because it doesn't bother them, that I do feel a charge for. That's the that's another gauge for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you could have the charge but not react. I guess you could react without a charge, but that would be, I don't know if that makes sense.
That's just acting. Like, you know, I think once you go through the process of ascension and you kind of integrate yourself into being this, you basically kind of start to act through your emotional range as opposed to believe in your emotional range. So like, you know, I could see how, you know, my responses a lot of the times, not all the time, obviously, because I still get triggered, but a lot of the times they just come out more of like a, you know, do I want to engage? And if I engage, then it would be an act. Do you know what I mean?
An act for whose benefit?
Because it's fun?
To make a
point?
Oh, this is like a participate, Earth. You're participating in Earth. Right? In other cultures, when they engage in emotional ranges, mm-hmm. they engage at, you know, one, there's not an influx of engagement, right? So they don't actually go in and engage into some crazy influx like we do. Most of our engagement is very influxed. It is, you know, the entire system is on override. Almost on the good scale and on the bad scale, right? Like, just like as a child, if your child is having a temper tantrum, you know, you're just in a complete influx. Like out of control, you know, electromagnetic field spinning around you in some crazy form, right?
Yeah.
But same thing with the happiness. Like their happiness is so elevated to where it's just crazy. But it's because as a child, you have no emotional control and no emotional range. So everything is at these huge extremes. So when you develop trauma, when you start to, you know, basically calcify these behaviors that are trauma based, it is because whenever you did feel an emotional influx about something bad, you were like on the 120 degree scale of bad.
Yeah.
Right. And so right now, if the same thing were to happen to you as an adult, because you can basically transverse the scale of emotional range, you would go, oh yeah, you know, out of 10, I would place this on a 6. But with a child, there's no scale. So everything is 10 or 120 and everything, you know, unhappiness scale and everything is 10 or 120 on the sadness scale. Just intense.
Two things on that. One, I think with children's temper tantrums, they often end up feeding off of the parent because they get up, they flip out because they can't get the toy or can't get the candy or whatever. And they're throwing a temper tantrum. And mm-hmm. then mom and or dad, you know, start yelling at the kid, and then, you know, it just builds back and forth.
Energy amplification. Yeah. But to that point is, I want to say the child can't regulate because right. the child does not have an emotional, like floodgates to like, right. oh, look, I will assess this on a scale and choose how to regulate.
Right.
To child, every reaction is 120%.
Right. And the best you can do as a parent is try to exemplify what a proper reaction is so they can kind of learn that.
Did you feel like your parents had proper reactions?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember an overreaction on my part that they, like, you don't mean in response to me.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I mean, you know, one, I want to say, and this is continuation talking on our previous podcast. So I want to say, you know, we talked about, what's his name? Gabarate.
Oh yeah.
This is continuing. We are the product of our system, yeah. right? So at birth, we are born, right? We choose to be born into a specific system, and specific system of our parent trauma, ancestral trauma, whatever you want to call it, really. But it's just the frequency, electromagnetic frequency, that is the baseline of your family dynamic.
Yeah.
And that frequency basically determines the traumas that you will then participate in, that you will set for yourself. And whenever you come in as a child, right, you made an agreement with your parents to come in and basically be the subject to through the bullshit. So then your trauma becomes X, right?
Yeah.
And so when you come in and your parents are in whatever situation they happen to be in, right? Like I give an example that my parents were in Soviet Ukraine, right? And lack, poverty, even if there is money, there's no goods to buy that stuff with. Scarcity, fear, you know, the unknowingness of like what's tomorrow going to bring. And so you're constantly in that heightened awareness on the edge of fear, right? And of course, as a child, I did not realize. I had no clue that that is just what the status quo is. But then guess what? That is the only thing that I have an option of vibrating as, right? Because you just, as a child, adopt in the vibration of the family dynamic in the country and your neighborhood and whatever. And that is just scarcity and fear and unsafety and the unknown and hopelessness and all that. And that is literally just what I am. I mean, like, if I had to look at myself as a child, well, yeah, duh, there's nothing other than that. And it's so obvious and it's so honestly discharging to me just to see like, oh, you know what? That is just the product of Soviet Ukraine in the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, like discharging in that when you, if you get triggered and you go, oh, it's just mini me getting triggered again. That does diffuse it.
Well, here's what I want to say. And I hear this a lot and this kind of ticks me off, but maybe I thought this too. So I think I thought this and everybody else thinks this, but maybe I will clarify it. Is at some point we feel so hopeless of being able to work on our trauma through our childhood trauma because it feels so overwhelming and inevitably unbearable, right? Like we think that somehow we think we are such a special snowflake and such a special case of this trauma that there's no way that I will work through it. And you just kind of give up. You're like, oh my gosh, the amount of bullshit that I've lived through, the amount of pain that I have suffered,
right.
You know, all these newer pathways, I don't know what the fuck they mean. So might as well just give up on it because it seems like the Joe Dispenza is the only guy that knows what the fuck he's talking about. And his workshops are $3,000 or $4,000, can't afford that. So I'm doomed for life. And like, honestly, that is how I felt to some extent is Joe has the answers because he knows how to unwind these newer pathways, but I might as well be doomed.
Right.
And it feels overwhelming and unsurmountable.
It does. And at the same time, it's like, you know, on one hand, my particular things feel overwhelming, just like I'm sure your particular things, just like everybody's things feel overwhelming.
Yeah.
But there are countless examples of people whose things are objectively much, much more serious than mine. And they seem to have their shit together. Joe Dispenza's spine was busted into a million pieces and he was basically guaranteed to be paralyzed for life. And he got through that.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I haven't had that happen to me. So maybe I don't have it so bad after all. And that makes me think, ah, what's wrong with me if I can't get my shit together and he can get through that?
Well, you know, Joe's spine being busted was a gift of the universe for him to go on the healing journey himself so he can kill
yes.
you know, countless of others.
Yes.
But what we're talking about is the reason why Joe's spine was busted on to begin with in the first place was the childhood trauma. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
His gift, the gift the universe gave him was to have this horrible accident, but it was all stemmed from unprocessed childhood trauma.
Sure. Yes. Okay.
I want to clarify that.
Yeah.
Because what we're talking about is the trappings of unprocessed, unemotionally regulated three-year-old that has no clue of what the universe is even about. And the only thing they feel, and the only thing I felt, is overwhelmed and hopeless and unsafe and afraid.
All right. Yeah, you're right. I guess what I meant was there are people who, as children, have had worse situations. Joe was the wrong example for that. There was I know a guy who worked for this charity, and there was some village or villages in Africa where when a child is born, if it's a boy, that's great. And if it's a girl, well, no one wants a girl. So they go and they put the girl at the edge of the village so that the, I don't know, lions or hyenas or whatever come take care of the problem. And the charity is like, they patrol every night to see if there's another baby out there. If there is, they take it and they bring it to like a nunnery or something, and it gets raised there. And I'm just like, oh my God, that I can't think of anything worse than that. What, you know, these children with that type of a trauma.
And here
I am, you know, first world problems.
Yeah,
that's an example. Any number of terrible examples of that children have gone through.
Yeah, but I think you're still going here from the wrong perspective.
I know it's not a competition whose childhood sucked the most. I know that. What I was saying is, as overwhelming as mine feels, and as overwhelming as yours feels at times, there are people with objectively harder situations that they have come out of who are able to, I don't want to say get over, it's not the right word.
Transverse
it. And so that, using that to as evidence that, oh, if they can do it, I can do it too.
I don't like that.
You don't like that? Why not?
No.
Why not?
Because that once again puts them into, oh, look, they're a special snowflake and their snowflake is so complicated and so hard and they can do it. Therefore, my snowflake is not that complicated and not that hard. So I have even better chance of doing it.
I don't look at it as a chance of doing it. I look at it as more like inspiration to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine to draw inspiration from other people. But what I want to say is, you know, going back to our other podcast or the previous podcast, is the neural pathway that gets fucked up and developed that go on onto basically, you know, screwing up us for the rest of our life are the same for everybody, regardless of their particular situation.
That's true.
And is the part that I want to highlight, is it doesn't matter whether you were abandoned by the creek and then, you know, where hyena were going to eat you and then some, you know, white savior man came and saved you. Or you were just in the Soviet Ukraine, didn't have food. Or if you're in middle-class America and, you know, your mommy didn't love you right. It doesn't matter. Like, right, I say these with a judgment, but it doesn't matter. It is, I'm unloved, I'm unwanted, I'm undesired, I'm bad, therefore I'm unsafe, and I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter at all. Like, you could have been raised in the palace. Like, there you go, the Baskin-Robbins guy. I know we brought him up, right? Unloved because his father was a total asshole and basically did not really believe that children needed love. But it doesn't matter. All of that is just your personalized narrative that is your story, your expression of the universal consciousness. That's what I want to say. But how it's programmed and what it actually ends up being programmed as is the same.
Yeah, it does boil.
And that to me is empowering. If anything to me is empowering, is not how fucked up you are versus how fucked up I am, but is we're all fucked up the same way.
It does boil down to the same thing. That's the thing. The whenever you're being triggered as an adult by something here in the world, some current event, something, some life circumstance, it boils down to how is my inner wounded child, how does it not feel safe? How does it not feel loved? How does it not feel seen or wanted or desired or whatever those are? There's a handful of things that all boil down to unsafe. Unsafe, afraid.
Afraid, yeah, unloved, unwanted.
Yeah.
But that's the same thing, right? Just this coalescing of one propagation as there's no love. If I was loved unconditionally, this wouldn't be my circumstance. But for some reason that you don't know why, because you're a child, you don't even you know, the only thing you know is I'm supposed to get nurtured and I'm not. What the fuck? And you're just confused. And the thing is, you could even be nurtured. Your parents could even be comprehending, you know, and like in my case, nurture. And in your case, nurture, right? 100% nurture. Like, oh my gosh, bending over backwards to make sure that you are as fed as you can be and, you know, clothed and safe and warm.
But if the market has no food,
no, but
too bad.
But for some reason, it could be even the most fucked up sense. Something happens. This little thread just comes out and you interpret unsafety and you interpret unlove and you interpret unwanted and you interpret dirty.
Right. It doesn't mean that you were unloved. It doesn't mean that you were unsafe. It's just that's how you happen to feel.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, justified or not, is all beside the point. That's how you felt.
But the empowerment is like, I don't know, do you find this empowering? The fact that I know that I came here into a specific narrative that is the same narrative for everybody, but this issue that I had to basically face in order to propagate, you know, almost 40 years of my life in the specific way of being lost, so then I can, you know, overcome my personal barrier to unconditional love and then basically start loving myself from within. And then through that, recognize that everyone else is in the same boat and feels unloved, and the only thing you can do for the universe is to offer that love back.
Yes.
Like,
I mean, that's I guess a great way to word it.
No, but that's it. If you just see the story, this narrative that feels so unsurmountable because you feel like you're a special snowflake, and so therefore, yeah, you know, Joe is talking about his thing, but that's his thing, and Tanya's talking about her thing, but that's her thing, and you know, I don't know, Bob is talking over there about some bullshit, but that's Bob's thing. None of that matters to me because I'm a special snowflake, so I'm unfixable. I have so many people, especially elderly, like older people, who believe that, right? But it's an excuse. I want to say that is just an excuse for you not to look deep into your wounded childhood trauma. That is quite literally the same for everybody. And that's right. What I want to say is anytime you come up with an excuse of why you're not going to face your trauma, you're not going to take care of your wounded child, is because you're too afraid of how much it will hurt.
Yes.
And you're running away from pain. And that's going to suck ass. And I know that is not, you know, nice to say, but that's it. As long as you're having some sort of excuse, oh, my case is incurable. Guess what? That is just an excuse to be running away from yourself and not wanting to face the overwhelm that is the childhood trauma. But again, I want to emphasize the reason why it's overwhelming is because as a child, you had no definitions for anything.
Right, right.
You just didn't know. And you were overreacting about everything and anything. You saw everything as either I'm loved or holy fucking shit, I'm going to die. And that's it. Those are the two spectrums. There was nothing in between. No, but that's it.
That is
and
it.
So because you couldn't comprehend the fact that you're functioning on these two very fucked up spectrums and you cannot regulate anywhere in the middle. You cannot go, oh, you know, this is not so bad. Tomorrow will be better. You couldn't do that as a child. It was the end of the world in that moment.
Right.
And that's it. Your self just basically calcified into believing that whenever something triggers you, it is the end of the world. Period. Like, and then your logical self as an adult right now can't even regulate and pause and go, wait, what? Why am I reacting the way I'm reacting? This is like so silly.
It bypasses the prefrontal cortex. It just skips it. And, you know, because that's clear because any other person who doesn't have that particular flavor of it, right? Someone gets cut off. Two people get cut off in traffic. One of them loses it, honking the horn, yelling at him. Gonna shoot him, and the other person's like, well, whatever. All right, it's the same event. Mm-hmm. So it's clear that it's triggering this person, and it's not triggering that person.
Yeah.
Why? Because this feels, for example, like he's been, you know, insulted, and so that reminds him consciously or subconsciously of da 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 when something like that happened when he was young, and that made him feel unloved, and that made him feel unsafe.
Yeah, like you see all those crazy videos of people like running up to cars in traffic and start literally hand punching, bare hand knuckle punching the windows out of anger because they feel like this car wronged them in some way.
Right.
Like, right. Just right to you and I, you will look at it like that is just fucked up bonkers. Right. But to that person, that is that child on the 120% spectrum, right? And complete override. Like complete override to where there's not even a sense because, you know, realistically speaking, 20 or 30 minutes from then, after that child has a little bit of ability to take some deep breath and calms down, they'll go, like, okay, yeah, that was fucked
that
up.
Fucked up. And now my hand's broken.
Yeah, right. Do you know what I mean?
It's yeah, because
you cannot regulate.
On a different day, if you had sat that person down and said, okay, you're sitting in a chair, everything's calm. Hypothetically, someone cut you off in traffic. Would you ever run up and punch that? No, of course not. That's insane.
Well, if they have that as their pattern, they probably go, yeah, I would, but they don't understand why.
Maybe. I was just saying if they just by talking about it and forcing it into the front of their brain.
Oh yeah.
Maybe they would, you know, it wouldn't. But when it happens, it doesn't. There's nothing happening in the front of their brain. It's all
reaction.
Is that the limbic system? I don't know what it's the lizard brain.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, but again, it's because the second you get triggered into that overreaction, that automated response, you go into the childlike notion of, oh my God, this is death. Because if it's not, oh my gosh, this is love, it's, oh my gosh, this is death. And it feels life-threatening because the child's brain is basically undeveloped as far as the neural pathways of regulation goes. And you're just overreacting from the standpoint of a three-year-old not knowing what this feeling is.
I think to some degree, it's like an evolutionary thing. Because, you know, if you get punched in the nose, it kind of bypasses your thinky brain and goes straight into, I have to fight back and kill this guy. I have to fight back immediately. It just skips it. Or if, you know, if there's some scary shadow on the side of your vision, you react to it. And so I wonder if like the idea of, oh, this hurt as a child, so I need to carry this with me and protect myself from it forever, which is kind of what's happening, is the this yeah. evolutionary thing to, it doesn't mean it works, it doesn't mean it's healthy, but you can kind of squint your eyes and go, well, that kind of makes sense, because, you know, if things that hurt us as a child stick with us, we will try to avoid those as an adult.
No, but that's it. It those things where you deemed yourself as unlovable and unwanted and unsafe and unnurtured become such a big, basically, dumps of right. pain that all your actions that stem out of them are there to mitigate feeling that way and to prove to yourself that either you're not that and you deserve to be loved and you deserve to be accepted and you deserve to be seen. Or some people spiral down into the depression of like, yeah, you know, because you could go both ways. On yeah. some days you can feel so loved because you're doing all the right thing to offset the fact that deep down you feel unloved. And on the days where you are like, oh my gosh, there's nothing I can do to feel loved, then, you know, then you're, but either way, both of those actions, you feeling great or you feeling bad, actually still stem out of unprocessed childhood trauma. Deep down, you're trying to solve some sort of situation from
yeah.
childhood.
Yeah. I mean, like, it kind of makes sense. Like, oh, if you learn that, oh, I touched the stove, that hurts, don't do that again. And that's a useful life thing to carry with you from age 3 forward. But, oh, you know, example, Dad came home and it happened to be a bad day at work. And then, you know, he didn't, you know, pay attention to me. And therefore I feel unloved. That is not a healthy thing to carry forward.
Yeah.
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 But they both have the same weight in our psyche. And in fact, the emotional ones, I think, run deeper than the physical ones. The physical ones are super easy to learn. Oh, touch a hot stove. That hurts. Never going to do that again. But the emotional ones, because they're so easy to trigger, and they're triggered by, you know, there's not that many hot stoves in my life, but there are all kinds of things that can trigger people, and they're you know, just driving can trigger people.
Well, no, you know, hot stove does not, you know, the pain body, the trauma is set in through an emotional neglect of you feeling unnurtured and unloved and uncared for. That is a very much an emotional thing. So that is what sets in all human behavior forward. It's not this physical endangerment. In fact, physical endangerment, if it's there, what would set in is how were you treated post the burn, right? Was there a mother who nurtured you? That would be the biggest impact from the burn.
I can see that, yeah.
Right? Everything comes down to you come in as a child and you need to be nurtured, right? Going back to our previous podcast, you know, you want to be loved. You're just this being of love and light. And the second the universe goes, wait, it's not love and light. And you get confused. You're like, wait, what the fuck is this world? And that is the lesson. The lesson is you come in and you are love and light, and you assume that what you will receive is an equivalent energetic match to that. But then guess what? You come into some fucked up circumstances and it's not love and light, right? Because your parents have bad days, dad's drunk, mom's a prostitute, I don't know, whatever. You know, it can get pretty bleak.
That's the word I was going to say, is bleak.
What?
I was about to say bleak.
Yeah. And so from that, you know, if that is the path and your life's journey, then everything is basically like, it's basically a tennis match. Okay, I throw the ball. Do I get love back? I throw the ball. Do I get love back? I throw the ball. Do I get love back? And the more of those balls we throw and don't get love back, because we're kind of cueing the world. At all times, what we are doing, you know, when we are born until the age of 7 is we're cueing. We're going, okay, here's how I think the world should respond. And the second it doesn't respond to your expectation.
Querying?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's both.
What is
querying? Querying is, you know, you're putting something out and then the query brings back the response, yeah. right? But the truth is you're designing your shitty life for yourself. So you're actually queuing it up.
Oh, okay.
So it is both. Yeah. So you're querying it in order to queue it up. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So you throw the ball and then what you want is unconditional love, right? You would just want unconditional love. And the more balls you throw out there before age of 7, and the more unconditional you don't get and you get something else, the heart closes down. And guess what? All of a sudden you're unlovable because I threw a lot of balls out there and it never came back with love. So now you're lost. You're like, I don't even know what to do. And so like in your case, your perfect example is one time you throw the ball out there and that ball happens to be a good grade in math. And mommy goes, oh my God, you are so perfect. And then guess what? You're like, oh my gosh, that is how I get love balls back.
Yep.
I throw all kinds of like, oh, I'm good at math and I'm good at programming and good at engineering. And mommy's like, oh my God, I love you. And then that's it. You learned to query a specific way.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And in my case, you know, guess what? The world is hopeless. It's unsafe. There's no one there I can trust to support me. So I learned to rely on myself. So if I throw the ball out there and the ball comes back as shit, oh, I can't trust the world. Guess what? Everything is going to come back as shit. So how do you queue up the world?
Don't throw any more balls out.
Don't throw any more balls out. You close down and you control all circumstances around you to make sure that the world is not, it doesn't even matter what the ball is going to come back as. Because guess what? I already know it's shit. And that's it, right? So like I queried the world and I formed a perception as to how I need to be for the rest of my life from age of 3 on up, right? In order for keep myself safe, right? So you were out there queuing those balls into like, okay, I have to behave this perfect way in order for mommy to love me back. And with me, I'm like, oh yeah, guess what? This box is closed. It's closed for business. And that's it. And the universe just kind of develops the system, or you basically design the universe, your own personal world, to develop the system and develop your world around the system, right? The system of, this is how I behave. You throw balls out and you expect to get certain type of feedback, and I don't throw the balls out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then here you are, you know, 40 years later, and it's like, you realize, oh, look at me. I've got my little child, myself as a child right here next to me. And that's the behavior that we're doing.
No,
that,
yeah.
Doing.
How I would introduce that at the end of the last podcast, I was basically given this as a tool to how you would work this through, right? Because what we're doing is, we have designed amazing, amazing ways of not addressing the root cause of all of our trauma. We have basically created all of these little labyrinth pathways, like we talked about in the previous episode, to keep us away from facing this core, this thing that is basically going to solve all the problems, right? But the solving all the problems results in us actually admitting that we have problems.
Yeah.
And the second we admit to have problems, we open ourselves up to pain that we've been trying not to feel for the last 40 years.
Yes.
And so this tool, the reason why we're having this podcast, this episode, is I want to talk about how you would utilize this as a very simple tool. And then basically almost shortcut yourself into denial and then force yourself to face what actually needs to be faced, as opposed to going out there going, oh, I'm a special snowflake. This is unfixable. Yeah. I will die like this.
Yeah. Sometimes it is, at least for me, it's hard to think about things at the top level and draw that line down to where it is that it's hitting. If I approach it that way. And instead, viewing it as, oh, what, out of the handful of things that it could be, what is my wounded child feeling right now? Does it feel unsafe? Does he feel unloved? Does he feel unseen? Does he feel unwanted? You know, it's one of those will just resonate with, oh, that's what it is. Like if you get cut off in traffic and you're all pissed off, you're like, yeah, I'm pissed off, but you know, I'm pissed off because he cut me off, you know, and you can't get any deeper than that. You can't go, well, I'm, you know, da, 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 because, well, dad did the whatever, and you can't trace that line down. It's why do you feel pissed off? Do you feel unsafe? Well, no, I had control of the car. It's not unsafe. Do you feel unloved? Well, no, I don't expect any love from this guy. Do you feel unseen? Yeah, he just cut me off. And it might be unseen in that example. And just...
I mean, that exactly goes to disrespect. The reason why people start beating at things is because they feel disrespected.
Right,
unseen and disrespect maybe is the same thing.
Yeah, I think disrespected is a step above unseen or unheard.
Yeah,
and maybe those feed into unloved. How I'm not saying that unsafe and unloved and unseen are at the same level necessarily, but you, but one of those.
Yeah, but if you're unseen, then the, guess what? No one loves you.
I mean, that is true.
Right.
But it may not register with unloved. It may register more with unseen or unheard or unwanted or unsafe. One of those, I think, for almost all these cases, when you're triggered, when there's a charge, I think there's only like a handful of them.
Yeah.
One of those will register. And it may, you may not even think that it's you feeling it. You may have to literally go envision your 3-year-old version of you right next to you. Hey, mini me. What are you feeling? Do you feel this? Do you feel this? Oh, it's that one. And one of them will just resonate. You'll just know immediately that that's the one that it is.
Yeah. No, but I think that's a great way. So I think it's a great tool to keep yourself or keep yourself on path if you're committed to wanting to process your trauma and to let go of your density and to basically have a happier life, right? The easiest way to do that, I mean, you know, and we're 70 something podcasts into that, but the easiest way to do that, and this is the new tool once again that I was given, I guess, is that imagine yourself standing here as an adult, but right there next to you on the left or your right, like I think it naturally will appear on whatever side you needed to have appear, will be your child. Allow your broken child to stand right there beside you. Right.
Yeah.
And when something happened and something is triggering, instead of if you do not have the capability or you feel like your personal devices will keep you from actually touching on where it hurts, just start with the premise, start with the notion is my child, my inner child is being hurt somehow right now. And instead of this being addressed towards me as an adult, right? Bypass yourself as an adult. And turn to your child and basically go, child, how are you hurting right now? And then that child will basically have an answer of why this actually hurts. And that is the pain that you can unravel. You can start to basically heal your inner child by acknowledging that your child is hurting. There's no stigma associated with it. This is not weird. This is literally 8 billion people on earth going through the exact same thing right now. And start talking to your inner child. And your inner child will basically have this influx. You will have this a symbiotic relationship to where the personal pain, whatever spot in yourself, let's say it's your solar plexus that is being heightened right now and it's like pulsating, that same spot will be completely locked up in your child. You will feel this cord of connection between your physical form as an adult and then your etheric representation of yourself as a child, however you want to imagine it. And you will see this cord of connection and you will see this pain cord basically go from you as an adult into the child. And then the child that's pulsating in an uncontrollable rate because I'm not loved or I'm bad and or I'm unwanted or I'm unsafe. And then you will see that, oh, guess what? It's just my child overreacting on that 120% scale where this is the end of the world. And then what you do, how to heal that, is you basically offer your child love. However that love feels great to you. It's either you hug it, you hold it, you say it is okay. I'm here with you. I'm here for you. I love you. And there is no such thing as time and space. So, you know, in that Interstellar movie, like, it, you know, it kind of highlighted what the universe actually functions as. And it functions as this in separate being where you are your own caretaker for once you're ready to heal. You will be there to heal yourself as a child for once you're ready to go into the space where you're willing to offer your child love. And so through that continuous basically space, the momentum of no time and space, you basically can go in there. And the second you acknowledge that you are broken as a child and you're holding your own child's hand and you're able to offer it love through compassion and kindness, and you can say to yourself, I love you unconditionally, that is when the healing takes place.
Right. Because I mean, I've done this a few times recently, and it's amazing. Just making that connection alone begins to dissolve the whatever the, you know, top level current event charges.
Yeah.
And once, you know, because you know, it's always bill of the office up here. And you know down here it's, oh, I don't feel seen, I don't feel loved, whatever it is. Now you have these two things and it's so, you know, one at the top and one at the bottom. And it's really, it becomes much easier to draw that line if you want to go, oh, okay. And you can connect the dots to get down from, I see how bill of the office makes my wounded child feel unseen. I can see it. I can see this reminds me of this, reminds me of this all the way down. Because it's all just, imagine, you know, 10, 15 blocks tall. And down here at the bottom is the wounded child. And up here at the top is built the office. And if you're dealing with it up here at the top, oh, I can't stand him. He's always so, I don't know, mean, whatever. And, you know, even if you could magically make Bill disappear, Bill gets fired, problem solved, right? No, there will be a new 15th block up there at the top. Or there will be a 14th block, which is also just as bad. There will always be something up here at the top to project that wound onto. So dealing with it up here is almost pointless because it's like fighting the water, going in the middle of the river and trying to fight the water and stop it. That doesn't work. You're never going to do it. The only thing you can do is, you know, deal with it at the root cause, which is that bottom block, which is your wounded child.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to give it love.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to actually start to love yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the narrative that we have designed around our trauma is that this trauma, this identity that we have built for ourselves, being unlovable, being unseen, being unheard, unrecognized, or unsafe, or dirty, or whatever, is basically why we have designed the excuses that we don't love ourselves.
Right. I mean, I think that is a huge, that is just endemic in modern society is that we don't love ourselves.
No, but it's not endemic in modern society. That is all 8 billion of us.
The reason
we have trauma is because we are unlovable. We do not love ourselves. At some point, that unconditional love that we were cueing the universe for did not get cued back. And then we determined for some reason, I don't know what it is. As a child, you're like, I have no idea why, but looks like I'm unwanted and unlovable. Undesired, unnurtured, uncared for, therefore I don't belong. That's it. There's quite literally not a different story out there. I mean, I challenge someone to give me an example of a different story than that. Deep down, it will just that.
What I mean is, I don't think it was as endemic in the olden days.
What do you mean by olden days? Modern day humans.
I don't know if it was, you know, indigenous peoples of the various countries. I don't know if it was this much this bad with them.
Well, no. I mean, Indigenous people and indigenous tribes were one with the universal consciousness.
That's what I mean.
Where they were aware and awake, you know, and they did not have to go in this deep into trauma and pain in order to then basically reawaken themselves into right. kindness and love.
Yeah. I mean, that between the society and culture of, you know, there's, you know, the community and the elders and the familial thing. Together, I think all of that.
But
helped.
You know, that is a fall of a human soul. That is the whole process of Earth. Is the human soul had to basically fall into unrecognizable abyss of loneliness and unrecognizable separation. Right, like we had to feel so separate from divine and oneness and really our own selves and one another, in order to basically have enough inertia and energy to upcycle ourselves into awakening. That is what that process is.
What that explains where we are today?
Or yeah, like right now, basically, it has the pandemic of us feeling not loved. And then therefore, if we're not loved, we cannot exercise that love out, right? That's what it comes down to, is because our system feels unloved and we feel unloved, the number one then symptom of that is we're not able to offer love back, right? hence all of our episodes about whatever love is not, is comes out of that. Is the second you recognize that you do not love yourself, you feel unwanted and unloved, you will hopefully see that what you offer then out is just a reflection of that. What you're offering out is not love, it's just a cue, right? Of like, oh, I'm throwing balls back because I think that's love, right? That's what you're doing, is you're throwing balls back and then hoping that that will be perceived as love. So then you can get the cue back of love. But all of that is just a broken system of nonsense, right? But in order for it to basically change itself and transmute into actualization of us actually being love and vibrating as love, and the entire earth for those who choose to ascend into love, right? That's what will happen, is we have to go so deep into our pain, and it has to be so charged up. Like, you know, we talked about this. It's almost like a battery. I will be posting this on the channel, like on the Saturday channels, but this much pain and this much despair that is locked within us, that is now being unlocked, is basically coming on as the kind of like a power bank that is all of a sudden gets turned on. And the second we actualize the idea that we have been suffering in loss and discomfort and pain, and then we will take all that energy, and the second we give love to our child, we give love to ourselves and acknowledge and release that pain and that loss and grief, we will transmute that energy and we will actually upcycle it, and it will basically enlighten the whole place as love.
Yeah.
But the indigenous cultures didn't have to do that because, you know, the human soul wasn't fallen and wasn't destined to be dormant in order to reawaken. But you know, the current pandemic of basically universe or our perceived timeline without love is basically solely there for us to basically reboot our system to come on as a power bank of actual love. Because if you spend 40 years of experiencing everything that is not love, and on all of a sudden the system like flips a switch and goes, holy shit, it was like more love than I could ever imagine. In fact, I love myself through the pain that I have experienced, right? I love every moment of pain that I perceived as pain because it was actually love, right? The second you rewrite that narrative with yourself, and again, I want to emphasize how you do that is by starting to love this inner child. That is it. That is the answer to all of it. The second you upcycle that energy, that dormant energy, and turn on yourself as love, boom, all problem solved.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree. And that mirrors my experience with this. Right. It's, we want to make it so complicated. We want to think that it's, oh, my case is so particular and so special and so unique that no general advice could ever apply to me. That's just, it feels, you know, I don't know, partially because we want to feel extra special, partially because, you know, it gives us some sort of excuse or justification not to.
Because we want to feel extra special? I don't think it's that. I honestly, here's why it was for me, because it feels so painful to go there, one, right? It hurts to go there and to go, oh my gosh, look, for 40 years, I have thought of myself as unlovable and undesired. And that has been my story. That is so painful to admit to.
Yeah. So then
I'm just running away from pain.
Or as an excuse to not do it.
But you have queued up the world, right? Like if my entire life has basically been self-created suffering to where I feel like I'm unlovable and there's nothing in the world that I can queue out there that will come back to me that will be pure and unconditional love, right? If I thought that's the case and I spent 40 years basically living that narrative, there's a lot of grief and pain and you almost have to mourn that idea, for a while. You kind of have to sit in that pain and you almost have to go like, oh my gosh, that's fucked up. And look at all these narratives and the stories in my life and the reflection thereof. And like the job that I have is a reflection of that. Who I'm married to is a reflection of that. How many kids I have is a reflection of that. Fuck, the car I drive, the type of food that I eat, what I wear is a reflection of all of that. Like you will have to realize that everything in your life is basically a reflection of that.
Yeah.
Now, and so there's, I want to maybe caution people. The second you actually realize that, a lot of people lose it. A lot of people lose it. And then suicide happens, one of them, like complete deterioration. They think they need to deteriorate all systems around them to restart over. Some people like divorce, move out to a different country or a different state, like take on the new career, rebrand themselves, like clear their wardrobe. Some people do that because like
live in a cave in the Himalayas.
I mean that or just like they try to reinvent themselves.
Right.
So I want to say that is a pitfall that you should realize is it is unnecessary.
Yeah.
But that is just you going through grief of realizing that everything you have designed has been through pain, but you can take the system and reswizzle it, I guess, right? Or resystemize it into love.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying you have to stick with the husband who beats you and you have to stick with your beat up car and you have to live in the same crappy ass state and a crappy ass house. I'm not saying that. If that change naturally needs to take place, please do so.
Right. But
you don't have to kill the system.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
You don't have to kill the system. You don't have to keep the system. This is a great opportunity to reevaluate all the aspects of your life and figure out what does and doesn't really fit in the end. You don't have to, on day one, change 100% of everything. That's probably not the right thing to do. But you should, you know, it should become more apparent why you have the job you do, why you drive the car you do, why you wear the clothes you do, why you're married to the person you are, why all these things. And then, you know, just because you got the job for the wrong reason doesn't necessarily mean you have to quit the job. You could maybe change your mindset around the job. Maybe you got the job out of scarcity. You thought you're never going to make enough money. So you took this job and now you got this job and you took it out of scarcity.
Yeah.
Is that the wrong reason to take a job? Probably. But now that you've realized that, you can go, well, okay, reset. I have this job. Can this job work for me in my new place of awareness? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, but I want to say this. This would be very beneficial if just like you're using these etheric tool outside of time and space to transverse yourself as an adult and basically connect to your broken child, right? And you have this symbiotic relationship with your open child, right? And you establish this channel of love, and basically the love starts to flow, the healing starts to take place, and it'll be this slow but very gradual process. Is the more of these instances where you can get triggered, give love to the child feels slightly healed, and then the love flows back, and the system will start to come on board, right? And as the system starts to come on board, and you start to integrate into yourself as a child, because basically what will happen is sooner or later through these nuances of back and forth, you will be your healed child in oneness. You will not be the separate entity that you imagined. You will have integrated the entire child being into yourself. And then I want to point out, you know, they talk about, what's his name? Dalai Lama, be very childlike, right? The reason why he's very childlike is he has went through this process of integration where all of his childhood traumas, right, been healed and acknowledged. He gave love to himself as a child, right? Now, he goes through it in a very special esoteric way, but I'm just telling people how to do it in a normal, here's 3D world way. And then you basically integrate yourself as a child and you become childlike because for the first time, let's say in your 40s, you will be experiencing world as unconditional love. Instead of cueing the world and going, I'll throw this ball and I'll hope I'll get it back. You're no longer throwing balls. You're basically your symbiotic relationship of this oneness that is you as an adult and is you as a child, and there's no separation between the two. You for the first time starting to see the world for what it is unconditional love. And so every event you experience is actually unconditional love, good or bad. Like, right, that scale no longer matters because everything is love.
I want to say that that Jesus said to be more childlike.
That sounds familiar.
I don't. Yeah. If I can find it, it's in the show notes. If not, then maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. That is the integration, right? If he said that, the reason why you say that is because you integrate the broken aspect of you that you have separated from, and you have built this wall between the pain that you don't go there and it's a la-la-la land that you don't feel, and then yourself as an adult who is very much functioning out of that pain. And because of the separation, you're basically not offering love forward. You're not feeling any love coming towards you. And then therefore the universe is shit. The world around you is shit. And then you're basically feeling hopeless and really questioning why in the fuck you're even here. Because if you came here to experience love, I don't see it. Right? And so this is why. This is the answer to it all, is because you have ran away from all of the pain points of self that is your child trauma. You have separated yourself, you are unintegrated yourself from the core that is love, and you're living in this separate reality. That is, I mean, honestly, just bullshit. I say that not as a judgment. I was right there, and I'm still at times I'm right there, but I'm providing a solution forward that is, I don't even know how much more simpler I can get.
Right.
I will point out, it sucks ass and it hurts to start to, for first time, feel yourself as a child. To, if you allow this process to take place, it will hurt. But the more reiterations of this you will go through, of like, I'm triggered, how you hurt as a child, I will give you love. I'm here for you. I'm loving you. I am compassion. You know, I am unconditional love. I am giving you unconditional love. And the more you go through these transitions of giving your inner child unconditional love and healing that wound, the more this integration will happen, and you'll just merge in. Sooner or later, you will literally merge in, snap it into yourself. It might take years. It might take months. I don't know. It just depends on how
determined you are to go there. I think every time you do it, you integrate a little bit more.
Yes.
And that's not to say that, you know, you won't have to do it again, even if the same thing triggers you again.
Yeah.
You might. No. But I think that the next time you would be triggered less.
Yeah.
And less and less. Yeah, yeah. To the point where maybe one day you're not.
Yeah. To give people hope, it would just less and less
is always better, because those triggers are never great.
Yeah. But the amount, so as you heal this bond, as you heal this separated notion of self, of yourself as unlovable and yourself as not love, more love will come on board. So it'll be this really transitory phase where, oh my gosh, there will be these points in life where you will feel overwhelming amount of love. And that is your system coming back on board. That is you healing this broken bond between you and your unconditional love that this child actually is basically a source of, right? And you're bringing your soul back on life as unconditional love. And it will be overwhelmingly beautiful. So you will have dark times where it really, really hurts to go there. But then if you truly follow through and you have the commitment, you have the tenacity, and you persevere through that pain, the reward is amazing. And you will just start to bloom and bloom and bloom. And it is, everything becomes love. Quite literally, like, everything is just love. And even if it hurts, like in the past, even if you will be facing an event that you would have interpreted as bad in the past, you will see it in the most amazing light as love. And you will embrace it in the most unique way. And you will rewrite your story of life forward. You will just retrajectory yourself, if that's the right word, out of this, the stuck pattern of narrative, and you will just offshoot and you will just be facing a completely different reality. I mean, guaranteed. You don't need to take $3,000 workshops in order to rewrite the system. This is how you rewrite the system. Commitment to facing yourself as a child.
Perfect.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
Did it. We're done.
Did it.
Next time we will not be here.
Why not? Stay tuned. We'll find out.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.